Cause last night I had something so good. These days get so long and I got nothing to do. I've been hanging around this town.
Welcome to Talking Giants, presented by SeatGeek. I'm your host, Bobby Skinner, here with nobody, no Justin Tay, but we're going to have an interview with Nick Filato. This is our fifth year doing it. We're looking at mid-round draft prospects. It's a little precursor to draft month. It kicks off next week, which we'll be starting off with the quarterbacks. We'll have a mock draft video out on Monday. So I hope you guys are doing well. Go send an extra thank you to Nick Filato because he has been moving, he's been scrambling, so he made time to do this, which he didn't have to do, so I'm very thankful for him. But also, what you got to go do, guys, before we get into this episode, is you got to check out Joy Mode. I think I speak for most men when I say we want to have better sex. Even if you're the best, you want to be better. You got to be like the Michael Jordan of sex. Whether you're happy or unhappy with your performance in the bedroom, why not perform even better? The issue is that over-the-counter erection pills contain unregulated chemicals, suggest unsafe doses, and include the risk of several other health problems. You can't have that. We can't afford health problems in this economy. That's why we partnered with our friends over at Joy Mode. Whether you're looking to spice up your intimate moments or increase your confidence in the bedroom, Joy Mode makes all natural and science-backed supplements dedicated to help men perform better. Danny King, he uses this stuff. He says it's the best. And I trust him. You always got to trust Danny King. He's the people's insider. Their trademark product, the Sexual Performance Booster, is every man's solution for increased blood flow, firmness, stamina, and performance. It's like a pre-workout, but for sex. It comes in a palm-sized packet like your favorite electrolyte powder. Simply mix it with 6 to 8 ounces of water for 45 minutes before sexual activity and watch the sorcery or the magic unfold. Redefine your intimacy and go to usejoymode.com/giants and get 20% off with code GIANTS at checkout. That's 20% off and free shipping with code GIANTS at usejoymode.com/giants. Great sex, solved naturally. You'll be glad you did. And here's Nick Filato.
Come on, pay attention in there. Let's go. We got a beautiful day. Work. Play fast. Whoa.
All right, year five. We've got Nick Filato, the Big Blue Banter podcast on. We're going to look at some mid-round draft prospects. This is the first time that we're doing a mid-round QB, too, with Spencer Rattler. So I'm excited. We got six guys, and there are four of them that I, like, really like. And then the other two are guys who are like, if the Giants draft them, like, I think this is a nice, you know, nice player to have, and I think we have the coaches to work with them. So how are you doing, Nick Filato?
Bobby, thank you so much for having me on. Doing well, man. Just like you, though, grinding through the tape. I just recently moved up to New York now. So I was in Jersey to Arizona to Jersey. Now I'm back in New York, and I'm just grinding through a lot of these players at the moment.
Yeah, it's glad to have you back in the Northeast. We missed you out in Arizona. What do you prefer, though? Arizona or Northeast?
That's tough, man. The food is much better out here. My family, my friends are all out here, but I do have a nice fond place in my heart for Arizona. I think Arizona living, it's beautiful with the mountains, the hiking and all that kind of shit, man. It's pretty cool. A lot of stray dogs though. That was a little off.
Really? It's just stray dogs.
I think a lot of them were escaped, right? Like I was in the Phoenix area, so I wasn't like near the border or anything, but there was a time and I was documenting some of it on my Twitter where I came across about, I think, 12 dogs when I moved to this one neighborhood in Goodyear, which is a small little suburb off of Phoenix, 12 dogs in about 6 months. And I'm a dog person. So I would like try to help them and find and call the county and they would never freaking help. But it was just one of those things where I was like, what the hell is up with this neighborhood? Nobody cared about their dogs. I would return dogs to people's homes and they would just be like, oh yeah, whatever.
Oh, they were people's dogs. They weren't actually strays that like live on the street. They were people. Yeah, that happens to me. Like if I go for like a walk or a jog around the neighborhood and then some big old pit bull, you know, like, you know, barking at you and, you know, 99% of the time they don't want to attack. So I'm sitting there in the middle of the street with my hands up like, get back, get back. At some had some dog. So that happens here too. Maybe
the
it's
the mental image of a 6'8" Bobby Skinner doing that is very hilarious.
Oh man, it's brutal. But we're here to talk some mid-round draft prospects. Now we got a better feel for Joe Shane, so maybe we can, you know, get some of these. Matt Parrott came from this episode. Ellerson Smith came from this episode. But we're going to start off with Spencer Rattler, first time doing quarterback on this episode. What do you got on Spencer Rattler out of South Carolina? I mean, the one time, you know, projected top first round pick to the, where he is now, right? I think he's in a better place now than he was then, honestly.
A much better place. I mean, this is somebody who's had to mature. If you just go through Spencer Rattler's past, this is somebody at right by where I used to live at a point when I was in Phoenix. He went to Pinnacle High School. And Peter Berg, who was the director of Painkillers, he directed Quarterback One. I think it's a Netflix series where Spencer Rattler was the star of that series. But in his senior year of high school, he got slapped with like a code of conduct. I think it was like a cheating violation or something. And he was suspended for the rest of his year. He ends up going to Oklahoma in his second season there, his redshirt freshman year, kills it with Lincoln Riley. And everybody's talking about Spencer Rattler. He's going to be the next big thing. He's going to be the next Baker Mayfield, the next Kyler Murray, what have you, right? And then it all falls apart and he's benched, ironically enough, for Caleb Williams, who followed Lincoln Riley, obviously, to USC. So it's a very humbling experience. And then he goes to South Carolina. And I would say he revitalized his career. Now, I don't know about you, Bobby, and I know you went through the tape. This dude got his ass kicked at South Carolina. His offensive line was so bad, right? Like, this guy was constantly getting just pounded into the deck. But, man, I got to say, from a mechanics standpoint, just quick, fluid. Everything about his release is out of his hands very quickly. I love his feet. I love how he navigated the pocket because, yeah, I think he suffered 39 sacks last season. It should have been a lot worse. It really should. He was able to get out and then try to get his eyes downfield to locate Xavier Leggett, which I feel like he did at a pretty solid rate. And I also just love how the ball zips out of his hands. I think he throws a beautiful pass. I love how he targets the middle of the field. I wouldn't say he has the strongest arm, right? But he can make all the throws. I think he has a B plus maybe arm, right? It's not like a top level arm in this class. It's not Caleb Williams. I think on some of the deep passes, they hung in the air a little bit too long. Xavier Leggett, he really liked climbing the ladder and grabbing those. But overall, I like him as a day two prospect. And we can get into some of the weaknesses here in a little bit, but I think he showed a lot of competitive toughness, a lot of grit. He can make all the throws. And from a mechanics and fundamental standpoint, it stands out over other quarterbacks that I watched so far this draft cycle.
Yeah, like you mentioned, like the footwork is, you know, for someone who kind of had the preconceived notions around him after things went at Oklahoma and then like the whole QB, like he came off really poorly and immature. You would think like, oh, probably sloppy footwork. And then you see it's like, oh, this guy's like got good footwork. He's got a good throwing motion. Like he lines up everything pretty well. And then, like you said, the arm isn't anything amazing, but it's adequate. And then you do see like you'll see flashes of bad and good, right? Like there's that throw versus I think Florida where he's got pressure and he, you know, he off his back foot put the ball, what, like 55 yards to I think it was Xavier Leggett where like the safety rotates down. Yeah, 55 yards off his back foot. Now, there's other times when he's got pressure and he'll make some panic throws, but a lot of times those were on like third and 20s or, you know, 1 minute left in the games, you know. So if you just watch him individually, like, oh, that's really bad decision. But when you think about the situation, it's a little more forgivable. So now he dealt with so much pressure, right? Like it was an issue. There's times where he's getting pressure with three different guys and you would see some really good like hero ball stuff. But I also think it messed with him too, because I thought it messed with his timing. And there was also times where, like, you know, they ran a good amount of play action and they, you know, what the Giants do, they'll run that deep post with the over and stuff like that. And there was a few times, this is my biggest like bother of him, is where like the over is coming open. If he just either steps up or slides in the pocket a little bit, all he needed was that extra half a second and he's able to pull the trigger on that over. And instead he's running around. But if you can put him in with like a halfway decent offensive line, it's going to be a lot better situation than anything he had at South Carolina.
Easily, easily. And I'm glad you brought up a lot of the points that you brought up. But one in particular I wanted to focus on. You brought up that Florida throw. I think that was the fourth quarter, 10:33 left. I have that right here in my notes. There were also several third and 15s that he ended up converting. One was a deep dig against Georgia late in the fourth quarter, where he was showing a lot of patience because the pressure was kind of getting on him, and he does tend to fade away from the pressure when he does have the time. And one thing about the patience throwing over the middle of the field that I appreciated is I watched him throw into the second window a couple different times between the hashes. What I mean by the second window is if it's an in-breaking route, a dig, what have you, that apex defender, that nickel, that slot defender, he'll take his drop if it's a zone coverage. And once let's say it's Xavier Leggett, passes the backside of that nickel defender, that's the first window. But there were times where the Mike or another route might have closed that window a little bit. Rattler showed the understanding and I would say the good overall judgment to wait for Leggett, understanding that he does have time and he can flow away from the pressure that was coming, and then wait for Leggett to pass into the second window that was to the right or to the left of a middle linebacker, and then he would fire the football in. So he understood when to use patience and when he had to get rid of the football. And that's not necessarily easy for all the points that we just brought up regarding the offensive line being so damn bad. So he did that several different times. I have that in my notes, and there should be a scouting report coming on a Giants Country for Spencer Rattler sometime in the next week. I just submitted it actually today, so a lot of this film is fresh in my mind. But yeah, I appreciated how he threw over the middle of the field. And I want to say I have the completion percentage. Yeah, I do right here. Rattler was 38 of 61, so 62% when targeting the middle of the field beyond 10 yards. So that's not a terrible, especially when you have a lot of interior pressure, that is not a terrible outcome beyond 10 yards. A lot of people just checked down. Rattler was at least he did look down the football field to see if there were options. And it's not like he had a great complement of weapons heading into the season. Like, let's not forget Xavier Leggett. He had an amazing 2023 season. He didn't do anything the first 4 years of his college career.
Yeah, made a really late push. Speaking of Leggett, isn't it crazy like how he can just like levitate at times where he jumps and it's like, oh, you jumped 2 seconds earlier. And it's like, nope, he's just floating horizontally through the air to make a grab.
This is such a good wide receiver class, and he might be the best with that, with jumping up and just hanging up in the air. And it's like, dude, do you have a jetpack on? Like, what's going on right now? Like, why are you just levitating above everybody else? I have some concerns with Leggett regarding fluidity and things of that nature, but on the vertical plane, he's damn good. And if the Giants don't go wide receiver early in this draft, which I think they're going to go wide receiver early in this draft, but if they don't, he would be an option somewhere on day two.
With Rattler, where do you see like the biggest issues in his game popping up?
The biggest issues with Rattler, I mean, personally, man, I hate to be against shorter and undersized quarterbacks. He's relatively small, right? I don't think he's that great of an athlete. He has that kind of like Pat Mahomes scrambling, you know, where it's like he's not like an amazing athlete, but he finds ways to create creases and then execute and runs with those creases. I think he just needs to overall. I'm not 100% certain on what I would have down for him. To me, it's the overall image of who Spencer Rattler is right now. He's already 24 years old. He's undersized. He's not a great athlete. I think a ceiling is kind of already, you kind of already know who he is, right? And if I'm a New York Giants fan, and I am, I cover the New York Giants, I want somebody where there's still a ton of development. There's still a ton of meat on the bone of development, right? And I think Spencer Rattler, yeah, he can still improve, and we did see that last year. But I think we know who he is at this point. And I think he's going to be a good backup, somebody who can step in and be relatively exciting. But I don't know if he's going to ultimately be that franchise guy for sure. So that's kind of like where I'm at with Rattler. What about you?
Yeah, I think he's a solid backup in the NFL, right? Like a lot of the things that I think he needs to get a lot better at are like, man, but what does this look like if he didn't have all that pressure? Like a lot of times the quick game stuff is late. Maybe, you know, the balls, like he doesn't have misses accuracy wise, but what he I don't think he has like pinpoint precision, where there's a lot of times, like if it's a horizontal route, it's just like, it's a little bit behind where it's not an incompletion, but it doesn't set you up for a ton of yak. And then and South Carolina didn't do the best job of giving him, you know, hot routes and stuff. But like, there's a lot of times when he had pressure and the hot is there and he's just not pulling the trigger on it. Like there was a play versus Clemson, which I thought that was probably the worst game of his I watched. You know, they had a stacked alignment with the two receivers out wide. They had a cornerback with way outside leverage. And then the safety was covering the number two on that, like 20 yards off. And they ran the drive concept with the backside and the front side linebacker blitzes. So now you've got two for two, and the second player covering is 20 yards off, hit the stick route. Instead, he's just kind of focused in on that drive concept, and they've got four for two on that. So I think he kind of can get stuck on that first read, and then if it's not there, he'll look to improvise instead of, you know, getting to his hops, because it was there for a day and a half. But what I do like about him is I think he's pretty really good reading safety leverage. There's outlier plays like, again, Clemson, where, again, South Carolina didn't do the best job of spacing, where they run two, you know, like bending verticals and then the dig. And so the verticals are like right next to each other. The safety opens his hips towards the number two, and the number three is open. He throws it to the number two, and he gets intercepted. But overall, I think he does a pretty good job of reading safety leverage, which is like someone like JJ McCarthy. I think that's one of his biggest issues that no one's really talking about, because, you know, people watch broadcasts footage. So I think he does that. And so I'm like, if he can get protection and a coach who can really like hammer down some of that quick game stuff, like, hey, read the leverage on this linebacker, hit the slant in that window, I think he can be like even like a halfway decent starter if you need him for, you know, 6 to 8 games.
I'm glad you brought up that Clemson play, because I was watching that today and I was like slowing down frame by frame to see what he was actually thinking. And if you do look, it seemed like the safety was biting on the outside route and he had the safety. But right when Rattler pulled the trigger, the safety just turned on a dime to undercut it and then intercept the ball. But it was a risk. But he also, I think, on that play, and it's probably a good bet to say this, was about to get killed. So he just had to get rid of the football. And he also, against UNC, believe was week one, they ran a few different cornerback blitzes at him, and he didn't necessarily pick it up, but a lot of it was away from the play too. It was away from the play side that South Carolina scripted for him. Look, I think from a mechanics and a fundamental standpoint, this is a quarterback who can operate a West Coast timing rhythm styled offense to at a professional level. Like, that's who I think. But for me, when you ask me what are your biggest concern, it's again that overall package of being small, of being old, of not really being a great athlete, not necessarily having a great arm. He's just solid. But is that what we want for a franchise quarterback, if that's what we're looking for? And for me personally, for the New York Giants, man, I'm just looking for the Giants to find that next dude, man, that next guy. And I'm just not certain that Rattler is necessarily that. I think he's fine, but not necessarily who the Giants are looking for. That's just where I'm at.
Yeah, I think if you're drafting him, you're drafting him to develop as a backup quarterback with a cheap contract, which, again, I'm pretty much of the philosophy of, like, if you want a quarterback, draft him on day one. And I think day two and day three guys are mostly outliers. I did it on an episode last week that from the 2017 to 22 draft, I didn't count last year because it's so fresh, one second round pick hit, and that was Jalen Hurts. And then there was four on day three, Brock Purdy, and then like Sam Howell's the second best out of those guys. So I agree with you, where like if the Giants took Rattler in the fourth or fifth round, do I think it's a horrible pick? No, but I don't really like taking the quarterbacks outside of day one, unless it's an outlier where it's like great athlete needs to be cleaned up, like a Jalen Hurts, or, you know, if Lamar had dropped one more position type guys.
I wonder if Rattler, though, there's coaches that stem from like the Shanahan tree. I wonder if they would like a Spencer Rattler, because Spencer Rattler can operate the quick timing and rhythm type of passes. And for a guy who's not necessarily a great athlete, I will say I liked how he threw the football when he was on the run. I think
I've got that on mine. It's like he's a good scrambler who keeps his eyes up for a throw. Where's good accuracy on the run, can make some off platform throws, but it'll die out on him a little bit if he's trying to push 45, 50 yards off platform. But then you get the throws like that Florida Gators one that we talked about earlier. So
exactly.
All right, Spencer Rattler, who do you want to hit next?
Let's go to the defensive line and go to the guy who could possibly be a first round pick. I don't think he's going to be, but after the combine, he very well might be. And that is Braden Fisk out of Florida State. So speaking on Fisk, I did his evaluation, I think, in January, right? And I had him as a good athlete. I didn't have him exactly as the athlete that he ended up testing out as, a 91% short shuttle, 96th percentile broad jump, 92nd percentile vert, 97th percentile 40-yard dash, 83rd 10-yard split. has those T-Rex arms at only 31 inches and a wingspan that's fifth percentile. So that's not that great. But what I wanted to highlight about Braden Fisk is I think this is a player who, yes, he's getting first round buzz now after that combine, but there are, as we joke about, 100 guys right now getting first round buzz. I think the Giants need a defensive lineman who can win not only when slanting and using their lateral agility, which Braden Fisk did all the time at Florida State, because they gap exchanged all the time, right? But somebody who can complement Dexter Lawrence and help the Giants get pressure with four. That's what the Giants are doing now. The Giants are not going to be blitzing nearly as much as they did when Wink Martindale was their defensive coordinator. So now you're going to need Brian Burns. You're going to need Kayvon Thibodeau. You need Dexter Lawrence. And you're going to need who else? Hakeem Nunez-Roches, DJ Davidson. We're not 100% certain. I think if the Giants wanted a guy like Braden Fisk, could be at 47. I don't think that'd be a popular pick, but I do think that is a valuable or a necessary need right now for the Giants, that second defensive lineman. And the things that I love the most about Fisk is just his ability to fire out of his stance, to stay low, and to slant and to cover a ton of ground. Like, this is somebody who can align as a four-eye shade and loop inside to like the opposite one technique side and do it pretty damn promptly and quickly with a ton of motor, with a lot of competitive toughness in terms of just, he never freaking stops. And I think he's also somebody who is pretty damn strong. And I haven't watched his tape in quite a while, because again, I watched him before the combine. But after the combine too, combined with the tape that I did remember, I came away saying, this is somebody who, if you had to say who is a player in the second round that you would be surprised if the Giants would go in this direction, I think Fisk would be that guy. But now I'm not even certain he'll be around in the second.
Yeah, it's interesting with him because he really looked really good at the Senior Bowl. Like you mentioned, that first step, that lateral quickness shows up really well. And like he has a never ending effort. And this, I think the Senior Bowl offensive lineman voted him best defensive lineman of the week. So he looked really good down there. And like you said, you see that quickness. Now he does have those short arms, which I think that's my worry with Fisk, is that for him to win, it's for the most part having to be at the start of the snap and working into the gap. And it's, he can work some speed to power, but it will die out at times. I'm not really worried about him in the run game with, some of the short arms and lack of size at 292 pounds. Because like when he's doubled, is he going to be eating up double teams? No, but he plays with such a low pad level that he's really hard to move. And if he's facing like when he was playing Clemson, versus LSU, the double teams, he didn't do well. But when he faced Clemson, some of those weaker double teams, he was actually able to split some of those and make some plays. So I think he can do well there. My worry is just someone that is, he's got stat lines from 2019, and I'd like to see more after that first second and a half and more past the point of attack with Fisk.
Yeah, there's a reason why I don't think, or I do think he would be available possibly even beyond pick 47, and it's his age. He's 24. This is somebody who spent how many years at Western Michigan? I think it was 4 years, 5 years. This guy is Van Wilder. He was in college back in 2018. So 5 years at Western Michigan before he transferred to Florida State, and he was dominant his final year at Western Michigan with 48 pressures and 8 sacks. And then at Florida State, he complimented Jared Verse really well. But this is an old guy with very short arms. And to me, man, and we'll talk about this with some of the players that we're going to get into a little bit later. When I think of Joe Shane, he doesn't scream. Somebody comes from Brandon Bean and the Buffalo Bills as a general manager who is going to invest in someone in the trenches with short arms. And especially with the age profile, him being already a 24-year-old rookie. But I do think his skill set meshes very well with what Bowen is going to do next year. And I think he does complement Dexter Lawrence. He's a little bit more undersized, but to me, he wasn't somebody who was getting bitched at the point of attack. Can he two gap and anchor down? Not really, but there's not a lot of guys who necessarily can do that. So for what he was asked to do at Florida State, I felt like he did it very well. And I think what he was asked to do at Florida State is going to be very similar to what Shane Bowen is going to ask him to do here in New York.
Yeah, and like you said, is he going to two gap? No, but he's not going to, like you said, he's not getting moved around or anything. Where you see some guys who kind of fit the profile of like quick first step, lateral quickness, they're okay, but when they face a double team, they can get totally washed out the play. You don't really see that with Fisk. Like you said, he plays with good leverage, and he just kind of just wrestles his way out of blocks, right? Like, he's not going to just give up on a play. Like you mentioned, that never-ending effort that he has. So,
he's also somebody too, man. Like, sorry to cut you off, but he has that never-ending effort. But I feel like he times that lateral agility, because a lot of the times, like I said, he's just exploding laterally off the line of scrimmage. Times it very well with his hands and how he employs his hand usage. And then he also kind of gets skinny through those like tight crevices while he does it. Like,
yeah.
His reactive quickness when he's rushing maximizes his, his natural athletic traits and what Florida State was asking him to do, which is a good thing. Like, mental processing, football IQ, all of that, I think is definitely a positive for Fisk.
And he's got such quick hands, which is obviously important when you don't have those long arms to rely on. So, and like you mentioned, Bowen's going to run some more, you know, stunts and games. Well, the lateral quickness of Fisk can really help that, and it can turn a pressure into a sack with him. So I'm interested in him because, like you said, he's getting first round buzz. I don't see that. I agree with you. But I wonder if the age and the lack of the, you know, cookie cutter size, like, could he slip into the third round? Like, I think if there's anyone who's getting first round buzz, that I think the margin, like the difference of where he can go versus where he's being mocked, I think it would probably be Braden Fisk to me.
Yeah, and it's so interesting too, man, because there's a lot of receivers who could fall into that too, with the receiver class issue, because the receiver class is just insane. And there's some guys who are being talked about on day two that I'm like, yo, man, I might like them better than some of these guys who are consensus day one guys, which is kind of crazy too.
Who's your like favorite day two guy for the receivers?
Oh, Ricky Purcell.
Dude, so we're going to talk about Cole Bishop. And yeah, watching that Utah versus Florida film, and Ricky Pearsall is just fucking routing guys up all day long.
All
dude.
Day, man.
It was nuts to watch. We got to interview him down in Mobile. The main thing he was complaining about the cold, so that worries me a little bit as an Arizona Florida guy that Ricky Pearsall is, and you're an Arizona guy, I'm a Florida guy, but he can route some cats up, man. It's fun to watch, and at all three levels, he's a fun watch.
He's exceptional.
More than Ladd McConkey.
I haven't watched Ladd per se. The tape that I've just seen of Georgia's offense, I think I'm going to really like Ladd McConkey. But there's guys I got done watching LSU's offense. I don't know if I like Purcell better than like a Brian Thomas, but I think there's an argument there, and it doesn't seem like the draft community is necessarily there for that, right? So what is up with Arizona State, by the way? Like, so many guys transferred away from Arizona State once that program blew up, and they all were like talented. It's almost like if that program in Tempe,
that's
Arizona,
why it blew up. That's how they're able to get all these talented guys in there.
Yeah,
all
no,
the
man.
Crazy shit.
Herman Edwards. I love it, dude.
Antonio Pierce and all those guys. So, do you want to go next to Cole Bishop since we're talking about, you know, Florida versus Utah?
Yeah, let's jump around a little bit. Cole Bishop, man. What were your thoughts on Cole?
This might be my favorite guy on this list.
I thought so.
His football IQ is just top notch. And Utah asked a lot of him, right? It wasn't like it's like, hey, play single high safety. They rotated him post-snap a lot with tough responsibilities. He played in every alignment. And he just kind of always did the right thing without being passive, right? A lot of times, like, oh, yeah, he's in the right spot, but he's passive. He was able to stay aggressive, right? If it's, you know, if they're running the deep post in the over, he did a great job, like, hey, taking that post read away from the quarterback and then cutting off the over. If it was underneath, I don't know if you saw, I posted a clip there running mesh. He plays his responsibility, comes down, fucking slams a dude on the mesh. Another play that was versus USC, versus Florida on, I think, a drive concept. Comes down and slams down on that. He just –
I think that was personal, too.
He is perfect. There's other – say, like Cam Kitchens, I love. Demadrian Taylor, Demerson out of Texas Tech, I love. But those guys will put themselves out of place at times with their instincts and aggression. Cole Bishop is able to stay aggressive without losing – his responsibilities, and that's what I really like about him.
It's controlled aggression. That's what Cole Bishop plays with, controlled aggression, and that's what I'm looking for from someone like Bishop. Because Bishop, to me, this is somebody who is physical enough to come down in the box. If you watch him blitz, he timed his blitz as well. So you're talking about someone who can blitz, somebody who can play near
and
the
blow
box
up a running back pretty well too.
Blow up a running back. He has like, because he's only 206 pounds, which is solid for safety. That's not bad, but he packs a punch on contact, especially when he squares you up. But he's someone who can play a post, man. He's somebody who I think because we're going to see a lot of two read coverages with Shane Bowen, meaning that the safeties are going to read the releases of the number two. And based on the route distribution, that's going to dictate the coverage. It's a pattern match concept that a lot of people refer to as zone, but it just ends up divulging into man coverage. Cole Bishop has the football IQ, has the instincts to be able to do that and not lose leverage on his coverage assignment. I don't think he's going to be fooled all that often. He was a player where I'm like, if the Giants do go safety in round two, which is something that they've historically done, right? Landon Collins, Xavier McKinney, obviously that has no bearing on this situation. I look at Cole Bishop, and he's a name that I haven't heard much of, right? And I think 47, it could be a little rich, okay? But I went into his tape of watching the other guy, Sione Vaki. And I was watching Vaki, and I was drawn to Bishop. And then I was like, this guy is really good. And I ended up giving him a late second round grade, which was something I didn't necessarily expect going into his tape.
Same. Like you kind of, when I go to watch him, I was like, okay, where is he in the mock draft simulators in like fifth round? And then I'm like, it always gives you second. You saying late second makes me feel better about myself saying late second, because it gives me a little confirmation bias for me. But yeah, like he can move really well. He can play all over the field, you know, like little stuff. Like Florida ran a post wheel, like a concept the Giants love, the post wheel with that backside drag. He takes away the wheel. It's like a 3rd and 8, 9, 2, right? And that linebacker doesn't pick up the drag that he's the way he's supposed to. He comes off the wheel, comes down, makes a big hit at the catch point and stops them on third down. There's just like, I could have written down so many plays that I wanted to talk through. Another one versus Florida where, again, they run the deep post and the wheel, and he takes away the post, right, where Graham Mertz wanted to go, and then undercuts the over, and then it's like, okay, Graham Mertz is, you know, forced to scramble and throw the ball away. I think he did on that play. So there's just so many, like, man, this is great safety plays, and he doesn't have the mistakes that show up that do for, you know, DTD out of Texas Tech or Cam Kitchens out of Miami, and he tested really well at the combine too.
Yeah, he's the type of player that if the Giants were to add him, Giant fans would love him. You know what, man? He might be – I don't think this is a direct comp, but it's similar to a Julian Love in the sense that he is just – he doesn't have a big weakness, right, to his game. Now, I think they're different types of players, but he's somebody that you're not going to be like, oh, my God, like, what the heck? Like, he sucked out there. Like, he blew his coverage. He missed this tackle in the alley. Like, I don't think that's going to be a Cole Bishop. And with this draft being so deep, this guy could fall, right? Like, we have second round grades on. That doesn't mean the NFL is going to value him that way. Things happen. It's a safety.
Safeties position. Always fall for some reason, too.
Yeah. If we've learned anything, it's the NFL doesn't value safety like a lot of fans do, it seems like. So this is somebody the Giants might be able to get realistically beyond the second round, who I think could make a direct impact in year one. Because if this guy steps onto the roster, he's probably starting at safety right now, because I'm not sure what the Giants are going to do. Is it going to be Dane Belton? Is it going to be Jalen Mills next to Jason Pinnock? You need depth there, especially if Shane Bowen's going to run these three safety packages that we hear so much about. You need to add more bodies there, and I think Bishop fits that perfectly.
Oh, I'd be disappointed if he didn't start over Belton. And like you said, he's a perfect fit for the Shane Bowen, because Shane Bowen's going to ask you to rotate post-snap a ton. And like you said, in the pattern match, and – well, guess what? Guess who's shown to be able to do that the most disciplined while still being able to, you know, be aggressive? That's Cole Bishop. So, yeah, he was my – I think he might have just even been the highest graded I had. Yeah, I think he's the highest – like, I have him higher than Braden Fisk on my big board. Like, I really fell in love with Cole Bishop's film watching him.
Did you just watch him, or was that somebody that that you saw before I told you about?
I watched him today, so I saved Rattler and Cole Bishop today, so they'd be fresh in my mind. Because sometimes you can watch a safety and then you don't watch him for 2 months and you forget exactly how it happened. So I saved Cole Bishop for today, and I was like, oh yes, great pick, Filato.
That makes me happy, man. That makes me happy. It's confirmation bias. We didn't talk about this heading in. I was like, just watch Utah's Cole Bishop. I like that guy. Yeah. I'm glad that you do too.
All right, who do you want to hit next?
Let's go to Max Melton.
Max Melton. So this was probably the first guy I watched on this list. I put him on my post-Senior Bowl mock draft. Talk to me about him.
Yeah, Max Melton. So this was one of the first – actually, he was the first player I wrote an evaluation on for Patricia Traynor over there at Giants Country. So I went into his film, and I hadn't seen anybody else from an evaluation standpoint. It's just who I watched, you know, watching college football every Saturday. And look, he's going to have some mistakes on tape. I think he's a little bit too over aggressive for his own good, which is something that does irritate me a little bit. I think from a tackling standpoint, that must be cleaned up, right? Like 26.7% missed tackle rate in 2023. It's not because he's scared to, and it's not because he's not physical. It's just an over aggressive nature that also manifests in coverage. Like he lost a slow go route against Virginia Tech on this really nice break by the wide receiver. I wish I knew who it was. Lost inside leverage on a slant that resulted in a touchdown against Michigan State, and then got beat by Zay Flowers on a fade back in 2022. Now, those are some of the weaknesses. I think it's a ceiling pick. That's what I think Max Melton is, because the athletic ability, it's there in spades. And I watched this guy and that jumped out at me on tape, Bobby. But then he went to the combine and he's jumping over 11 foot in the broad. He's jumping out of the damn gym. And I'm like, oh, crap. OK, so what I saw on tape definitely translated. And one of the aspects of his game that I really appreciated is click and close downhill. He's shot out of a cannon. Look, all these cornerbacks are excellent athletes. But when I watched Max Melton, I was like, dude, I haven't seen a cornerback really jump out like this. Somebody who is not being talked about in the first round at that time. He's not being talked about in the first round right now. This is a true like mid round pick.
Yeah.
He is freaking explosive. And they ran Rutgers a bunch of cover two trap, right? Giant fans, we know what cover two trap is. It's the flat defender. He sits and he looks through the number one, who is his assignment. He looks at the number two receiver, right? The inner receiver. If that inner receiver is going to run an out route or a flat route, he's going to jump it. Okay, Daniel Jones has been baited into this several different times, and it's unfortunate, but it's a good coverage that is run. He was so explosive.
The Seattle interception.
Yeah, yeah. The Seattle interception, there was one against the Colts back in 2022 that wasn't an interception. It just got Isaiah Hodgins absolutely annihilated. But around the line of scrimmage, I really appreciate Max Melton. And when I look at his athletic ability, this is somebody who has that baseline athletic traits that I feel like could really lead to somebody who is excellent in man coverage. It hasn't necessarily happened yet, but I think it's there. And I think if you pair him in the mid rounds with Jerome Henderson, then we're talking about somebody who can be developed and groomed into being a starting cornerback in this league with the closing burst to just close throwing windows like that. So that's one of the reasons why I appreciate it. And he has the ball skills too. I felt like in trail technique, he positioned himself, had the spatial awareness to position himself perfectly to time his jumps with that explosive lower body to get his hands on the football. So I think there's some things to iron out, but overall, I like this tape.
Do you think a move to nickel makes sense for him, or are you kind of viewing him as an outside guy?
I think it could make sense, yeah, because I don't know if he ran the three cone. I'm going to look that up real quick.
But, I don't think he did. I'm looking at the write-up, and I usually would put that on there. He ran the 40.439, the vertical jump 40 and a half inch. I don't think he – everyone's skipping out on the agility drills at the combine now, which is a whole nother rant.
Which makes sense, because if you're not good at it, don't do it.
Yeah,
DK Metcalf probably wishes he didn't do it. Now, it worked out for him, but he fell to the second round, like running a really bad change of direction and three cone drill. But dude, 40 and a half for 91st percentile, and then 136 inches in the broad jump, which is over 11 feet at 98th percentile. And I appreciate that those types of explosive drills. And I think they do translate on the tape too, because that was one of my primary things that I marked down on his evaluation well before the combine.
So the reason I would want to bump him into nickel, like you said, he does need to get better at tackling, but I do think he plays the run well as far as, you know, getting off blocks, and he's feisty, right? And like you said, he has the speed. My issue is I don't think he has the makeup speed for when he makes mistakes when he's over aggressive, right? Like you very rarely see him, to me, like if he loses, get back in the catch space. You mentioned that touchdown I gave up to Roman Wilson with Michigan, and then there's other plays where I think in the slot, it's when you're playing that aggressive press man, a lot of time you're bringing pressure with that. So the ball's getting out quick. You're not having to get, you know, worried about getting beat on a second move, or you're not, you know, having to worry about getting beat vertically. If you're playing a ton of zone on the outside, he fits really well. I just, you know, I think he's more of like if it makes sense, like a hip watcher, right? So he stays really connected through the rep, but he's not always like turning his head and, you know, being able to, like, get his hands on the ball as much in the games that I watch. And again, I think when he does get behind, which isn't often, he has a hard time getting back into the catch space.
I don't think that's a terrible take. Those are some of what I had down. And there was a rep, I'm trying to remember exactly who it was against. It might've been Indiana, where he was in the slot and they tried to throw a slot fade on him, and he didn't really necessarily surrender leverage, but I wouldn't say that he dictated at the line of scrimmage all that well. He got set up to the inside. It was an outside release, but he got right back in the hip pocket, played through the catch point. Like, again, the aggressive nature, it's a double-edged sword. Like, when you're aggressive, it's great at the catch point, right? It's great if you tee up and frame your tackle well, but you're going to miss that tackle sometimes. That's one concern I think I might have with the, well, I don't want to say it's a concern, but he needs to clean up the tackling. And hopefully, if he's not coming from depth as much, it's going to be cleaned up a little bit. Because if you're going to play nickel, one of my, like, the aspects of playing nickel that don't get discussed enough, like, look, coverage is excellent. But remember Grant Haley?
Oh, yeah. Everyone remembers Grant Haley.
Everyone remembers Grant Haley. Why did Grant Haley find the football field? Because I'll tell you something.
Run defender, man. You got to be like a linebacker.
It's so important, especially with RPOs and the zone read and things of that nature, to be able to play the run when you're in nickel personnel. Max Melton has the mentality and I think the ability to do so if he just cleans it up. And, you know, he didn't play it too much. I think he played 40 snaps of it in 2023. So I'm definitely willing to test him out there. But again, this is a true middle of the draft type of selection. Again, if they iron it out, Bobby, I support this type of pick.
Let's talk about that nickel in the run. And that's something I've been kind of preaching the last, honestly, who really woke me up to it was one, the Rams, you know, the way they use Taylor Rapp and it really opened you up to it.
Yeah.
And then watching Taron Johnson on the Bills, where it's like that dude plays like a fucking linebacker at nickel corner. It's nuts. And you watch this year, the Giants struggled on run defense. But like, we saw Bobby Okereke play really well. We saw McFadden play well now that he was next to Okereke. Dex, I thought A'shaun Robinson did a really good job on the run. I thought the edges could have been done a better job.
I agree.
I think a lot of the chunk plays were because of the DBs on the Giants. Like, a lot. And it specifically, Cordell Flott getting bullied in the run game. And that's something where, like, and especially with Shane Bowen, you know, where there's going to be less stacked boxes. I'm like, man, the nickel corner is going to have to play the run or the Giants are going to continue to get killed out on the corners. And Burns isn't a great run defender either. So it's not like you're bringing in, you know, a top flight run defending edge.
And if you looked at Wink Martindale's, and I know you know this, their defensive structure, especially when they were out in base personnel and they would have their odd front, they're basically building a wall with that odd front and spilling everything to the outside. And in order for that to be successful, you need your nickel cornerback to be able to tackle. Because everything's getting spilt out to the contained defender and the secondary contained defender. And that's my issue with Cordell Flott. One of my issues with Cordell Flott. And I don't hate Cordell Flott. I think there's still a lot of room for development. He was drafted at 20 years old, but he was like 170 pounds when they drafted him. They stick him out there at nickel, and you have everybody spilling these running backs to the outside and nickel personnel. And you need that guy to make that tackle. And if he doesn't, you have a running back on the edge with leverage. And you better have a good pursuit safety to clean that up. But at that point, it's an 8-yard gain at worst. So, yeah, to me, man, that's why Darnay Holmes is another player that a lot of people didn't want to see out there. But I was like, Darnay Holmes is a pretty damn good run defender. He's pretty good around the line of scrimmage. No one really wants to give him that kind of credit, but he freaking is, dude. He's just not great when he has to guard CeeDee Lamb as the number three all by himself. Understandably so.
Right. All right, who do you want to hit next?
All righty, let's go to Mekhi Wingo. This is an interesting one out of LSU. And he, again, is similar to Braden Fisk in terms of him being undersized. He has 32-inch arms, though, so a little bit big, right? I did not know anything about Wingo, and I went into this tape not specifically watching him, but he stuck out to me, again, just from a pressure type of standpoint. I do struggle, and I think I brought this up a little bit before, struggle with the fact that I don't know if Joe Shane would make this type of selection because he's smaller, and that's an issue, right? Because look at AJ Epenesa, you look at even Boogie Basham, you look at a lot of the guys who were drafted when he was in Buffalo. They're all big dudes with long arms. 32 inches, that's not overly short, but we've seen Buffalo invest in guys who have like 33.5-inch arms and things like that, and guys who are a lot bigger than 6'2", 284. A lot of the defensive linemen are, you know, 6'3", 6'4", 6'5". So I'm not sure if Joe Shane would be interested in this, but this guy's quick, man. He was very quick off the snap. I had, this is my little synopsis on him, if I may. Quick, adaptive, and flexible. Wingo is great in a phone booth with a slippery nature and an authoritative punch that can stun offensive linemen. He has an array of moves and understands how, when to strike to maximize separation while staying low into contact. Wingo flashed the ability to also win on the edge, which can give defenses a versatile option who isn't a liability across the line of scrimmage. Wingo's ability to get upfield to disrupt wasn't necessarily maximized in LSU's odd defensive front, where he played 4-eye shade and 4-technique in non-passing situations. That fact, combined with the gap exchange element of laterally moving at the snap, limited his penetration ability through the gap. He was aligned over pre-snap. Still, his excellent lateral agility and low center of gravity while moving allowed him to successfully attack the half man of blockers, but it's plausible that his burst could be successfully employed as a three technique in an even front, while also being an asset in a defense like Shane Bowen, who frequently twists to create four-man pressure, similar to what we were talking about with Braden Fisk. He's an elite competitor that fan bases of whatever team selects him would more than likely appreciate. He's versatile, plays with excellent leverage, plays with excellent leverage and is a different task to frame due to his lateral movement skills and low nature. However, that low nature can get him in trouble against bigger guards who quickly set him and control his chest. Despite that, he's good and disruptive football player with efficient hands, a plan, and the short area quickness to win as a pass rusher at the next level. I know that was a lot, so it wasn't really necessarily a synopsis.
Well, the get off shows off, his get off the snap shows up quickly. Like, there was a third down versus FSU in the end of the third quarter.
Oh, yeah.
And LSU sent six, right? So they had I think FSU had a wide receiver aligned tight. And so they blitzed that corner. And if you pause it from the side view, on the all 22, he's like a step ahead of all of their other defensive linemen, all their edges, a linebacker that's blitzing, and a slot corner. Like, he's a step ahead of those guys. It's like, okay, this is a defensive tackle. And so you mentioned, like, oh, he's 6'2", 284, small frame, but in the run, dude, like, he plays a good run defense. Like, he plays with good leverage. And I think it was one of your first two notes where he's able to strike, extend, and read really well. And you don't really expect that when you see the 6'2", 280-pound guy who's not projected to go very early. So, like, I was, like, impressed with the way he's able to get under offensive linemen's pads and lift them up and be able to read and react in the run game.
That strike contact is something that stuck out. And also, man, when you're rushing the passer, your ability to protect your chest is vital, right? And if you watch him, man, he can strike, and then the next thing you know, he is in that half-man relationship. He is hip-to-hip with an offensive lineman. If you watch the Wisconsin game, he did this a couple different times against Wisconsin, and he just is able to keep that center of gravity so damn low while having kind of his shoulders tilted forward and his hands active enough to just kind of swat away any attempt to grab his chest. The chest is reduced, like the surface area of his chest. There's really not a lot to attack when he is rushing. And the thing that probably stuck out most to me that I was not expecting is he's pretty freaking flexible, right? Like, when he is bending the edge, he puts a lot of stress on that ankle joint. You don't see a lot of guys with this build, the 6'2", 284-pound guy that no one's really talk about, put his foot in the ground and is able to bend, and his knees are almost scraping the ground, yet he is able to maintain his momentum and bend through that contact to separate and then still pursue and locate the quarterback, which he did against Wisconsin and he did throughout his tape. He dealt with some injuries this past year, but I don't think it was anything too significant. I think it was a lower body. I think he actually had lower body surgery, and it didn't specify what it was, but he came back for the bowl game, which really kind of shows his character. I mean, this guy was going to the draft. He didn't have to do that, right? And he came back for the bowl game against Wisconsin. And I'm talking a lot about that game specifically because he balled out of his mind. So this is somebody, another day three pick. This isn't somebody who's going to be drafted in the first two rounds or what have you, but somebody I knew nothing about going into the tape, and I was like, better than I expected.
Yeah, absolutely. So the last guy on this list, it makes me so angry that he's not 6'3 or 6'4, because then I would be in full bloom love. But it's like the size makes you have to, like, pump the brakes on being, you know, full bloom love in this guy.
Oh, definitely. And that is Troy's Javon Solomon. We know that the New York Giants have a little bit of an affinity with Troy, but Solomon, I watched him probably back in maybe late December, early January, and I was shocked by how explosive he was and how he won high side. And that is going to be so important in Shane Bowen's defense. I think it's one of the reasons why they really targeted a guy like Brian Burns, who was similar, a little bit smaller, a little bit more explosive than a Harold Landry, who had a lot of success with Shane Bowen when he was healthy. But you need somebody to align from a wide angle and then rush through the high side, so through the outside shoulder. So what you need for that is burst, a quick first, second, and third step, and an ability to bend through contact. And this is something that Solomon does very well. Solomon, man, he can get up into a tackle shoulder and he can stay low and he can present little to no target for that tackle. And he's wildly explosive in doing so. And I was very impressed with his film, but the dude is zero percentile, Bobby, zero percentile in height. He is eighth percentile in weight. Still, he has relatively long arms. His arms are just a shade under 34 inches.
Yeah.
he has over an 80-inch wingspan. So he has that whole Aziz Ojulari thing going on where he has long arms, but he's a little bit smaller, but he's much smaller than Ojulari even. But there is something to be said about a player who is very short, has natural leverage, yet he can dictate the offensive lineman because he does have arms. I don't know if that's going to translate to success for Javon Solomon, but that would be a hope, I guess, right? Because 11-inch hands, dude, that's 96th percentile for an edge. This guy's really weirdly built, and his tape is very exciting, and that just intrigues me.
You wish he was like 20 years old, because like, oh, he's just going to grow 2 more inches. Yeah, like he's, no, he hasn't, you know, he's got puppy paws. But, you know, and I know this sounds wild, but when you watch him, and I'm not saying he's going to get anywhere near this, he reminds you of the way Will Anderson Jr. plays, where he's able to stress, you know, stress the corner consistently, right? And if he gets a tackle who's trying to protect the corner, he's going to attack the fucking your inside shoulder, jack you up, and then counter inside. And his hands are always moving. Like you said, he's able to like bend. He can work laterally, but he doesn't live off of lateral moves like a lot of the smaller edge guys do. And they come in the NFL and that doesn't work. It's just the fact that like he works the cross chop, like he can convert speed to power. And even in the run game, right? You think a guy like him would get eaten up, and there's times where he does. There's a lot of times when offensive lineman is all like balance, he's pulling and pulling him on his face. You know, and he's able to slip off blocks, and you saw he was able to have all those tackles for a loss. It's just that NFL length gives him issues. And the question is, if you're facing 8 good tackles a year, how productive can he actually be in the NFL, which is the question. But I think this is a guy who's going to maybe not be a down-to-down winner, but if you give him consistent reps, he's going to flash in some of the box score stats.
And he's going to give you some just absolutely demolishing type of hits, which he has on tape, which will probably draw penalties in today's NFL. But, you know, I'm glad you brought up the speed to power. He has an array of pass rushing moves. It's not like a one-trick pony type of thing. I've seen him unlock long arm. I've seen him use the bull rush, turn it to a push, pull, work the swim, get to the half man, dip, rip, all those kinds of things. So when I went through this dude's tape, man, I was very intrigued. But at the time, I didn't realize that he was only 6 foot. Now, I could tell he was a little bit undersized, but when he came in, I was like 0 percentile. It's freaking small. Now, he's also in the 90th percentile for a lot of other, for his hands specifically, and I think like the 75th percentile for length. So that is a good thing. We have seen Joe Shane do take size outliers, take risks on them, specifically with Cordell Flott and Wandale Robinson back in his first draft. I don't know if he's going to do that in the trenches, though. And that's something that we haven't necessarily seen yet. We saw how he discussed the Jordan Riley bit. He was like, dude, guy's huge. Like, that's what he's looking for in the trenches. And I can't hate him for that. But if you're talking about a niche player, somebody who can come in and be a pass rushing specialist, Solomon could be that guy. But I think there's other teams that will probably value him higher than the New York Giants, especially if the Giants just went out and got Brian Burns.
Where are you comfortable taking Solomon?
It would be a day three. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think so. I think I had a third round grade on him, though.
Actually, I put him as a late third, but obviously if you take him in the day three, you feel a lot better about it, because you're like, you can talk about, oh, does he fit a need? Not right now for the Giants, but I think you're going to get a guy who's going to be productive, and I think that's what day three is about, more so than just plugging holes, because more times than not, you end up plugging holes with below average players when you view day three like that. So yeah, I'm excited to watch him in the league. You know, last year I kind of went like, you know what, I'm going to start paying attention to size more, right? Stop getting off on the outliers. And then you see, like, Ivan Pace last year, right? Yeah, I'm finally like, you know what, I'm done falling in love with these tiny linebackers who can move quick laterally. It doesn't work. And then he comes in as a UDFA and fucking is like a pretty damn good rookie for the Vikings. So maybe I'm going to have to get back in on the outliers this year.
He went to the perfect system, too. And that's the second year in a row. I think it's the second year in a row where it was a small linebacker that I loved. So I love Malcolm Rodriguez back at Oklahoma State too.
Yeah, we liked him too.
He ended up going to the Lions, and he had a great rookie season. And then last year they drafted Jack Campbell, and I think he was relegated to a more backup role, if I'm not mistaken. And then Ivan Pace, that was just silly. Sometimes you got to overlook the outliers, especially when the tape.
Especially in the seventh round. Like, if you're in the seventh round, take Ivan Pace. Like, don't worry about, you know, the fact that he's that short. Like, you're going to get more production out of him than whoever else you draft there.
100%, man.
So, all right, fun stuff, man. It feels like we just started. You host the Big Blue Banter podcast with Dan Snyder, not the one from Nickelodeon.
You sure?
Has he been getting any tweets from that now that dude, that's back up?
Oh, probably, dude. He's been getting tweets for years about that. So if you guys want to go and just harass him, it's Dan Snyder NFL. Poor guy.
Yeah, I now that the blue check marks don't mean anything, it's probably because that's what would happen is they would look up Dan Snyder and then his thing would pop up and then he would get tweeted at. So I'm hoping that he's getting some. So if you're listening, Dan, let us know. Or maybe all our listeners. Hey, our listeners can do what they did with you. I joked at the end of the pod last week. I was like, you guys need to go tweet at Nick Filato and say that moving's not important. And look, we were able to get the episode. But glad you're back in New York. I'm sure we'll see you. Maybe it's like the LPG Dexter Lawrence softball game or something
so
like that.
So with that, I usually actually, ironically enough, go to Florida because that's May 18th, I think. And I go to Florida most years. So I probably won't be at that, but I'm going to try to make it to training camp this year and do all that. And you'll see my face around and it should be fun, man. We'll definitely link up and maybe I can join you in your van for some festivities.
Yeah. What do you got planned for draft month with the Big Blue Banter Pod?
So I know Blue Wire, the company that we're with, has some stuff planned. And I don't know if anything is solidified quite yet, but we might have live shows and things of that nature. But if not, we should discuss things. Why do you guys
awesome.
You guys doing something exotic?
Yeah, we're going to do the stream in our office in the city. So
where you guys at in the city? Midtown?
Yeah. Like nice. Because I don't know New York City super well, I'll just say it's between 34th and 41st Street. So I guess that's Midtown, right?
Yeah, it's definitely Midtown.
Okay, yeah, Midtown. I should just put out the address there for everybody. I don't care. all right, so go check out Big Blue Banter with Nick Filato and Dan Snyder. It's at Nick Filato. Always good having you on. And then we'll see you before next year, but we'll see you next year on the pod.
Definitely, bro. Thanks for having me, man.
Hey, Sula, you better hope I never get back in there. I will kick your
All right, thank you, Nick Filato, for joining the show. Go give him a follow. Very, very appreciative of him for making time and coming on. Before we get out of here, we got to talk to you about something. We got to talk about one of the best prospects in the draft, and that's Tommy John. That's not John Tommy or Johnny Tom. It's Tommy John. Elevate every morning with Tommy John's Second Skin Underwear. This stuff is the best. What you put in your pants can make or break your day, and the luxurious support of Second Skin guarantees everything will go smoothly. When you wear Tommy John, you're much more comfortable, so you can do everything better. Tommy John's stylish and soft Second Skin underwear has dozens of comfort innovations like a supportive contour pouch and breathable, lightweight, moisture-wicking fabric with four times the stretch of competing brands. The stretch is the most important thing, and with the Second Skin underwear, like I use it, man, and something you learn as you get older, buy good underwear. There's no, don't, you know, buy cheap, crappy underwear. Buy good underwear that fits, you know, it fits you well, it stretches and makes you be able to breathe, keep you cool down there. And Tommy John does that, and specifically with their Second Skin underwear. With over 20 million pairs sold and thousands of five-star reviews, guys everywhere love their Tommy Johns. That's why Tommy Johns doesn't have customers. They have fanatics. Get 25% off site-wide right now at TommyJohn.com/talkin'. Save 25% for a limited time at TommyJohn.com/talkin'. TommyJohn.com/talkin'. See site for details. You'll be glad you did. All right, that's an episode. Again, thank you very much to Nick Filato for jumping on. Next week is draft month, right? So Monday, we're going to have the mock draft video come out. I'm really excited for that. Tuesday, we're going to be breaking down the quarterbacks. Friday, we'll do running backs and tight ends. We're going to do a couple of position combos the first 2 weeks outside of quarterback, and then we'll start getting eight guys on each position. So I'm really excited for it. Draft month is, you know, it's a great time of the year. We do a ton of content. I'm going to put out breakdowns on this channel of JJ McCarthy and Drake May, Romo Odunze too. Just cover all my bases, so I don't have to do a draft breakdown on the first round draft night. We're going to be live streaming for all of it, and draft hoodies are out on April 1st. Maybe we'll give a sneak peek to those to our Patreon. So thank you guys. Go tell Nick Filato you enjoyed the episode. We'll be back Tuesday. We love you. We'll see you then. Until then, let's go big. Thank you.
John Boy Media has a new teammate. It's iHeart Podcasts. What does it mean? John Boy Media shows can now be found over at the Dan Patrick Show. That's right. How cool is that? Wake and Jake and Jimmy's Three Things have joined the iHeart Podcast and Dan Patrick Show family. And the best part, they'll still continue to be the same shows you know and love. If you couldn't tell, we're excited about this one, and thank you guys for listening.